This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello and welcome to Made in Turkey, a new podcast series with Ahval. My name is John Lubbock. I'm a journalist from London. And in this series, what I want to do is to look at different aspects of Turkish society and culture with a broader view than you'd get by reading the news. Sometimes it's hard to put the news into context unless you have the long-term history and culture of a society. So that's the perspective that I want to give with this series, to give English speakers a broader understanding of Turkish politics and culture, which can help them to understand Turkey better. This week, we're kicking off by looking at Turkish football. Football in Turkey has a central place in cultural life and in politics. It interacts with Turkish nationalism and political ideology. It's a site of political control and resistance to control. And the fortunes of clubs often mirror the economic fortunes of Turkey itself and of the power of different political movements. My guest today is Bilgehan Ocak, a journalist and a Fenerbahçe supporter. Welcome, Bilgehan.
Welcome, Joe.
So we had a chat yesterday, and I said I've been reading Patrick Keddie's book, The Passion, recently, a book about football and modern Turkish society and how those things relate. Shout out to Patrick, who I did my master's degree with in international politics over 10 years ago now at City University. If you're watching, thanks. And thanks for writing the book. I learned a lot of interesting things from it. I'd like to read a sentence from the book that really struck me because it explains some of the political and social nature of football in Turkey and the way that football encodes political power and nationalist aspiration. And its use as a tool of political power. Patrick says, "The visible pillars of the new Turkey under the AKP are the nation, the mosque, and the family, all traditionally associated with patriarchy, but underpinned by economic patronage networks of property, big business, and the state, from which women are also largely excluded." I think that gives a kind of a high-level understanding about how politics and Turkish football relate to each other, which is something that we're going to be talking about. Just to kind of explore a couple of other things that really struck me about how Turkish football works that I learned from Patrick's book. Firstly, that most Turkish clubs are member-based associations which hold elections for the post of president. In the book, I think Patrick actually goes to the Fenerbahçe Stadium for the re-election of Aziz Yildirim, the president, watches I think he goes to the Trabzonspor one when Trabzonspor's president was re-elected, and watches the speeches by the different candidates, and then you see the live voting. And I thought that was quite a strange thing, that you have live voting for club presidents at their stadiums in Turkey. Obviously, the election of club presidents makes the role quite political, but also means that the president isn't responsible for the club's finances, as they are in most countries. This means that ambitious presidents are often tempted to borrow money and make big name signings promising the fans success. In reality, this makes Turkish football one of the most debt-ridden leagues in the world, and debt in turn opens up the possibility of corruption. The government plays a central role also in appointing members of the Turkish Football Federation and uses its influence through the federation to secure sponsors for clubs. These companies tend to be linked to the state, and control Turkish football by the state grew stronger after the 1980 military coup, and the state began to try to direct political energy into football culture, in effect encouraging hooliganism. National and international matches became emotionally charged in the 80s, peaking during the Turkish PKK conflict in 1992, when the national anthem was introduced before games. So basically, you know, how do you see the relationship between Turkish football and politics? Why are they so mixed up together? And do you think that that's something that has become more a stronger feature of Turkish football in the last 20 years with the AKP government, or did governments always have a strong influence on Turkish football?
I think we cannot divide it before and after AKP. It was always there. But when populism grows, becomes the main thing in policy, it We see it also in football. There must be a relation between Turkish football and Turkish policy, because the budget of the clubs are coming from the municipalities in many Anatolian cities. So we cannot divide it. What they do is, to be re-elected, they give funds to the clubs. They get new. The ambitious men, who you said, are paying a lot of money to the club. And when club goes up, when club becomes popular, also he becomes popular. So this popularity becomes him, makes him to be re-elected. That's why we cannot separate these things.
When we went over this earlier, you were saying also that the kind of growth in nationalism after the 1980 military coup and the conflict with the PKK also led to the national anthem being sung at the start of games, and it kind of increased the kind of political nature of some of the chanting that was happening in the stadiums.
Well, like the Janus statue, it has two faces. Turkish nationalism was very generally, Turkish nationalism was founded against the Greek nationalism. And Kurdish nationalism existed against Turkish nationalism. Turkish nationalism got its curiosity by Kurdish nationalism. And Kurdish nationalism became very popular when they saw the furiosity in Turkish nationalism. So this is a horrible chain that we cannot get out. It was not... I know that government didn't tell people to start singing the national anthem before the matches. People did it by themselves.
And then at some point it was made obligatory in all games.
Yes, now it's a rule. You start singing it before every matches.
Who is Melih Gökçek?
Melih Gökçek was invented a team. There was not a team like that before. He just made a team called Büyükşehir Belediye Ankaraspor, which means the municipality of Ankara FC club. And of course, it meant nothing. So a few years later, they came to the first division, and they thought that they will be very successful also here in the first division, but they couldn't pay. They weren't bad. But they couldn't achieve their targets. The target was to be the champion of Turkey. And I think they never get the fourth or fifth position. Whatever, a few years later, the government told the clubs that the municipalities and the football clubs must be separated. Before that time, it was probably ruling by the same man. So after they were separated, the club's name is changed to Osmanlıspor, which means FC Club Ottoman. That's all. That's again means nothing.
Well, it's part of this kind of neo-Ottoman cultural drive that the AKP has had for a number of years, where they're kind of nostalgic for the Ottoman Empire. So they like to, you know, have people dressed up in Ottoman outfits, and they like to, you know, their series about Abdulhamid II and stuff like that. So it makes sense from a kind of cultural AKP point of view why you would want to have an Ottoman club, I suppose.
Well, I think I find a populism. Because don't forget that when Osmanlıspor defeats in a match, they said that Osmanlı lost. And now you start reading that sentence and Osmanlı lost, Osmanlı's relegated, Osmanlı getting, Osmanlı's in trouble. So when you start reading that, it becomes normal for you to say Osmanlı in a bad position.
So eventually, Melih Gökçek lost. He was forced to step down by the AKP from being mayor of Ankara, and the AKP lost the municipality at the elections last year. And as a result of that, the funding for Osmanlıspor was cut by the municipality, and they've now gone bankrupt, I think.
Yes, and they changed their names again. They became Ankaraspor again. So there is not a team called Osmanlıspor anymore. There will never be an Osmanlıspor again. Osmanlıspor was never existed. That's what we should say. Osmanlıspor was the ghost team.
Are the dinosaurs still there, though? I mean, Melih Gökçek famously made a big park full of dinosaurs, which everybody in Ankara loves.
Dinosaurs, robots, and stupid gates all around Ankara. But what we have to underline something. Melih Gökçek was trying to show us something, which is it was about contemporary art. Contemporary art is something, and Melih Gökçek is something more than contemporary art, and it's something like dystopia.
It sounds to me, Bilgehan, like you are an Istanbulite, and you know maybe that's what you say because you're not from Ankara. Maybe somebody from Ankara would say that maybe you should respect the robot, you know. As Melih Gökçek said to people who criticized his robot structure. Respect the robot.
Now only the producer of that robots can say that, but he will be the only man saying that.
So
Dinosaurs was fantastic, Johnny. It was unbelievable because it was horrible things. It should not be removed because it was so bad to remove. We have to see that, and we have to say that. No one can produce a statue worse than this. I think they have a value of showing us what the art cannot be. So what Melih Gökçek showed us, just don't do what I'm doing, then probably you will have the average at least. Not do what I say. We understood that. If a municipality starts funding the clubs, it becomes something horrible. So what government said, you have to separate the teams and the clubs, and teams and the municipality. I'm sorry. So what Başakşehir did was the same thing with what Ankaraspor did. So it was before İstanbul Belediyespor, which means the football club of municipality of Istanbul, they changed their names. One became Başakşehir, a very newborn village of Istanbul, what I can say, and one became Ottomanspor, because Melih Gökçek was brilliant on finding names in everything. And he's very active in Twitter, so... But thanks God that he doesn't understand anything about English. So I hope we will not face with his tweets with capital letters and unending tweets.
Huh? Who are Başakşehir here and how did they win the league?
Story to tell why Bilal Erdoğan, son of Recep Tayyip Erdoğan, is in the stadium. Shortly, we might say that Başakşehir has been largely supported by the Turkish government in the last.
last couple of years, Recep Tayyip Erdoğan personally said that I founded Başakşehir, so that's why his son, Bilal Erdoğan, is at the stands.
So I think one of the things that is interesting about this, the way that this connection between local municipalities and the national government and teams in Turkey works, is that the recent success of clubs like Başakşehir, they represent a kind of the way in which the AKP government has been trying to create a kind of new base of sort of middle class support for itself. And some of these clubs that the Turkish government has been supporting in the last 20 years, they kind of seek to create a new power base in Turkish football, which is part of the AKP patronage network. But I think that that's going to be very difficult for them because of how Turkish football, the culture of Turkish football works, because you have these three or four big main clubs that are all pretty much from Istanbul. And it's very difficult for other clubs to break into that power structure. The case of Başakşehir here is an obvious example because, again, they don't have any supporters. Their attendance was the lowest. They won the league last season, but their attendance was the lowest average attendance in the league.
Well, let's start with the end. Başakşehir will always be the low, will always have the lowest attendance because they have zero supporters. So if you don't have any supporter, then it is impossible for you to be a normal football club. Well, I think that we live in Madrid and you support Atletico or Real Madrid, and someday a man says, we know establishing a new club called FC Madrid and we will be in competition with Atletico and Real. And probably Madrid people will say, why are you doing this? Instead of supporting the clubs that we supported for years and years, why do you do this? And he says, because I want to do. This is the story of Başakşehir. And Başakşehir will face the same destiny with Osmanlıspor. Melih Gökçek was defeated. I'm sorry, the new one was defeated in the election, and we don't have any Osmanlıspor anymore. The same will happen on the day that Tayyip Erdoğan stops ruling the country. If we will be defeated one day, next year, we will understand and we will face with the reality that Başakşehir has never existed. There was not a club called Başakşehir in Turkish football history. It was an illusion that we thought that there is a club called Başakşehir. The name of their stadium is Fatih Terim. And Fatih Terim is the manager, who we call it as technique director in Turkey.
Of Galatasaray and the national team.
Yes, but he was the hero of Galatasaray. But there is a very important connection between the conservative Anatolian states and the city teams. This is how we call them. In my childhood, in many cities, it was the same man. The chairman of the club and the mayor of the municipality was the same man. Like there was Celal Doğan in Gaziantep, and he was ruling both. And it was the normal of that times.
But that really shows how politics is part of an economic patronage network in Turkish society, right? That
sure.
Because the presidents of the club are elected, you can have somebody who is a politician or a very rich businessman who gets elected to that position, and they can use that official role as president of the club to also give contracts to their friends, to promote themselves to the electorate of the city.
They want to be sure that they will be elected again in the next elections. What I wanted to say is, you can be the mayor of Konya, but if Konyaspor gets relegated and it goes to second division, then it will be very hard for you to be re-elected. It also gives a, I don't know how you say it in English. It's a life kiss. This is how we call it. It's a life kiss to the economy of the city. This year, Hatay is in the first division. And Hatay is very, very famous with the food tourism. Hatay cuisine is probably not the best, but one of the best in the world.
I'm sure that Antep Lila would disagree with you, but...
Antep Lila will disagree, but Antep and Hatay are not far. So we can think that they share the same culture. But Antep is again very strong on that, is for sure. Now, Hatay, but not also, not for this year, because it's a pandemic year. But Hatay, probably the Hatay Stadium has the capacity of maybe 20,000, I don't know, maybe less, maybe maybe more, but AKP builds new stadiums in many Anatolian cities. I don't know what they did in Hatay, but if not, I'm sure that they are not building it. So Hatay will have a stadium capacity of 20,000-25,000 in recent years, unless they have it right now. When Hatay plays against Fenerbahce or Galatasaray or maybe in Trabzon or maybe with a team that has a target for the championship, many people start to come to the city for that weekend. They will spend time, they will spend money. So it's a part of tourism for this conservative Anatolian cities. And so there's a big connection between the cities and the clubs of the cities. So municipality wants to rule them together because they're almost, their targets are together. If club goes well, it may, it can help. It
gives an economic boost to the city.
Yes. So it will make sure that you will be elected again.
Match fixing scandal.
I just want to go back slightly in time to 2011 and talk about the match fixing scandal that happened in that year, which I recognize that as a Fenerbahce supporter, this is a difficult topic for you because Fenerbahce was implicated in the match fixing scandal. But just to introduce it for people who don't know about this history, in 2011, Fenerbahce narrowly won the league after Trabzonspor had been leading for most of the season. Soon after, wiretap recordings were released of Fenerbahce board members discussing fixing matches in coded language. Fenerbahce fans turned their anger against the government in the stadium, chanting slogans against the AKP and against prosecutors investigating Fenerbahce president Aziz Yıldırım. Yıldırım was politically aligned with more nationalist or Kemalist politicians, and indeed Fenerbahce has a reputation of being a reasonably Kemalist-leaning club in general?
Well, what he was saying is the last castle of the Republic.
So this is a very Fenerbahce position.
Maybe it's a fortress, but
so
what we're saying.
So obviously then what happened was that Yıldırım and other people were prosecuted for allegedly trying to fix matches in order for Fenerbahce to win the season. Yildirim was convicted of match fixing in 2012, but appealed the sentence. But then what happened was that in 2013, the conflict between the AKP and the Gulenist organization in Turkey, followers of Fethullah Gulen, the exiled Islamic cleric who lives in the United States, that conflict broke out in 2013 when Gulenist police and judges released some wiretaps again of government figures supposedly being involved in corrupt activities. So because some of the same people had been involved in the wiretaps of Fenerbahce board members and other people in the match fixing scandal, when the conflict between the AKP and Gulenist broke out, the investigations and the trials of match fixing were basically forgotten about in some way, because the prosecutors who had been leading them were the same people who were involved in who were linked to Gulen, who were then purged from the judiciary after the conflict with the government started. Famous footballing figures like Hakan Şükür, who had been close to both Gulen and Erdogan, and had actually served as an AKP deputy in parliament for a little while, were forced into exile because they were seen as being supporters of Gulen. Yildirim, Aziz Yildirim, the president of Fenerbahçe, was acquitted in 2015 of match fixing, but lost the presidency of Fenerbahçe in 2018 to businessman Ali Koç. As a result of the match fixing scandal, Beşiktaş had to give back their Turkish cup. Beşiktaş or Trabzonspor were very annoyed that Fenerbahçe didn't have to give back the league title that they won. I think that Trabzonspor still have an empty table in their trophy room in Trabzon where they want to put the title that they say that they won.
I see, John. Now I may not be very objective at the time. Well, first of all, I have to say that Trabzon probably does not have a trophy room, because it should be a very small cupboard will be enough for them. Because they don't have probably
anything. That's easy for you to say as a Fenerbahçe supporter, you know.
Well, Trabzon is called the Tiger of Anatolia in Turkey. This is how they describe themselves. Tiger of the Anatolia. And they broke the leadership of Istanbul by being a champion in 1970s. But it was, I remember the day very, very perfectly. It was 3rd of July, because my birthday is 4th of July. And I was planning what I'll do on my birthday, on the day that Aziz Yıldırım, İlhan Ekşioğlu, Şekip Mostroğlu, blah, blah, blah, was arrested by the police. Well, as a Fenerbahçe fan, I would like to greet our loving chairman, Aziz Yıldırım, from this Ahval podcast, which I'm sure that he will not listen.
Hello, Aziz. Hello.
But he was, he showed us something. First of all, we have to underline something. There can be a match fixing scandal. If you ask me the question that is there, I would say probably there is. I have to say probably, because I cannot prove that if there is or if not.
But there have been incidents where, you know, this wasn't the first time that this has happened.
Not the first time, but we have to divide it into two. What we understand from match fixing. What happened in 2011 was nobody said to a club, I'll give you this money and you'll lose the game against me. We could not see it anywhere in 2011. But what we saw, imagine that we're playing with you, let's say this Saturday. I'm Fenerbahçe. I'm Trabzonspor. Mm-hmm. And my glass is Fenerbahce, and my glass starts speaking with you, and it says, you don't have a target this week. You are, let's say, in the eighth position. You will not be relegated, and you will not go to Europe. So if you get a point from that match, I can give you, let's say, X amount of money. This is what the match fixing scandal is. In my opinion, this is not a crime, but this is my opinion. And I think it should be legal and it should be encouraged. This is what we call teşvik primi. Teşvik means is encouragement. And encouragement is very effective because one has a target and he plays with 100% of his power. The other doesn't care and wants to remove from any trouble. That can equalize their motivation. But this is my opinion and this is illegal. I know that. So legally, it's a match-fixing scandal. And the second thing is I want to tell about the 3rd of July, 2011. In Turkey, there is something called FETÖ. This is for sure. I cannot say that Gulenists are all FETÖ members. That's something impossible to say, but I have to say that there is a FETÖ clique in Turkey, and it was very well organized by the leading of these FETÖ members. Well, I don't know if it was, if they did something, what they spoke between them.
I mean, certainly Gulenist prosecutors were involved in the allegations of match fixing. That's certain. I mean,
well, that's certain. But I cannot. Well, what I know is, Fenerbahce calls itself the Republic of Fenerbahce. This is how we call it. This is a Republic of Fenerbahce. There is not another club says Republic of blah, blah, blah. There is no Republic of Beşiktaş, Republic of Galatasaray, Republic of Gençlerbirliği. I have a skirt from my hooligan times, not hooligan, let's say, fan times. I was wearing my skirt when I was going to the stadium, and it says Republic of Fenerbahçe, and it's written in English, Republic of Fenerbahçe. Because Fenerbahçe is a very powerful civil society foundation. This is how I can describe it. I don't know what they thought. I don't know what happened. I certainly have no idea.
Why are attendances in the Super League so low?
To go back slightly to the match-fixing scandal, the question that I was going to ask you about the long-term effects of what happened in 2011, because I think it's important to talk about what the kind of result of the match-fixing scandal was in terms of whether it affected the average attendances at league games, and whether it affected, in general, the belief of Turkish football fans in the competitiveness of the sport. In 2011, the average attendances were around 14,000, and that dropped to 11,000 by 2014. Then the Pasa League e-ticket system was also brought in 2014 after Gezi Park, kind of as a response to the political sloganeering that was happening, especially by the Beşiktaş fans who took part in the Gezi Park protests quite centrally. So I just wonder if, do you think that the drop in attendances that happened after 2011, 12, 13 was due to the kind of how much was it due to the Pasa League system? How much was it due to the mistrust in Turkish football and the match fixing scandal? Or was it to do with some other structural factors?
Well, I'm just noted you asked me five questions in one question.
What was the kind of long-term effect of the match fixing scandal?
Now, let's make a comparison. Let's compare with 2010 and 2020. I think that will be better. In 2010, many stadiums were full of spectators. They were chanting, they were marching. In 2020, there are only a few stadiums are full. And only in a few matches they are full. There are many. I remember that, let's give an example from Fenerbahce. The capacity is 52,000. And Fenerbahce plays maybe 30 or 35 games per year in Kadıköy, where the stadium is located. And probably 20 of 35 games was totally full, and you will not be able to find a ticket to follow the game inside the stadium. I don't have the exact numbers, but I am sure that last year you can find a ticket for every match. It has never become 100% full. The match-fixing scandal was a reason of this, of the numbers going down for the attendances. But I cannot say that this is the whole thing. Match-fixing scandal, what we understand from calling it match-fixing, it didn't make us mistrust the league, because we didn't trust this enough before that scandal. We always have a suspicion in our minds, where we always had a question mark. We knew everything, not everything, we knew many things, but that was the year that we saw it. But that year in 2012, the attendances, the numbers of the attendances did not go down. There were attendances. There was success on this subject. But what I think is, the main reason is the purchasing power of Turkish people. Let's give an example. A match ticket costs 50 Turkish liras for one person, which is now about $6, no, maybe more, let's say $7. Yeah. In 10 years ago, it was about $30. But what we saw is it has not the same correlation between the ticket prices and the income. Our income became almost the same, but the ticket prices went up. Normally, they stayed the same, but the income has decreased a lot. So for now, when a family wants to go to the stadium, imagine two boys, father and the uncle, wants to go to the stadium. The cheapest ticket cost will be 200 liras for them. They'll probably eat something outside for four. They may buy something official. So at the end of the day, they will spend at least 500 liras, which is the quarter of the salary in Turkey. But it was not like this before. In 2010, It was again 50 liras, whatever. But we could spend that money to our hobbies. The yearly income per person was $12,000 in, I think it was in 2013. And now it became 8,500, something like that. So now everybody steps away from the stadiums because it is expensive. It's not cheap. This is a reason of this is the reason of Istanbul. What we can say about Anatolia is the winter is quite cold in Anatolia. Like in Sivas, Erzurum, Malatya, your ears will be beaten by the cold if you don't wear enough. It's not like Russia. It's not like Ukraine or Poland or Latvia, but it's cold.
Would you say that that geographical or climate reason is also possibly the reason why there's three big main clubs in Turkey and they're all based in Istanbul?
I can say that, but I have to add one more thing. Antalya is never cold, but Antalya also does not have enough attendance. So how will we, at least how will I explain that situation? Because Antalya is not Erzurum, Antalya is not Sivas. Antalya has a wonderful weather, with climate is perfect there.
It's not, Antalya is not a really big city though. I mean, it's a summer resort. Lots of people go there in the summer, but in the winter, there's not going to be so many people there, right?
Yes, but there are people enough to make a crowd inside the stadium, but they don't. What I can say is people lost. The Patrick's book said the passion about Turkish football. I think that's a very nice word to describe Turkish football and football in Turkish people's minds, actually. It's passion. Football is passion. This is what we call in Turkey. They started to lose that passion. There are many things now, thanks to the energy of the people in their daily lives. There are again people following everything, but the referees, I have to say that, and I
should we start talking about the referees now, Bill Johan? Are we going to go on to the referees?
Time to dunk on some referees.
Because I know that I know that you want to talk about the referees. So this is not an issue that I came across in Patrick Heddy's book. He doesn't mention how much dislike there is.
Because if he starts watching the games, he may not understand those men wearing pink or black dresses, uniforms, and with a whistle on inside their mouth, are referees. They are almost monsters. They are like UFOs. So it's very hard to think that they are real referees. They make so much mistakes that everybody starts saying, that's enough.
So what's the problem with referees? Why are they so bad in Turkey?
Well, the talented ones probably are murdered or are sent away or pushed not to do this job anymore. So in some way, they disappear. Then we saw somebody with whistles and giving horrible decisions. After VAR, I think you call it VAR, but VAR is a word in Turkey and it's a meaningful word in Turkey. VAR means is it or isn't it? This is what I can say. After VAR in Turkey, we thought that the system will not allow them to make mistakes. Because we know that they're very untalented. They make mistakes. But we thought that with war, they will see, because we are sure that they don't have that capacity to see, to think, and to act. But with war, they have plenty of times to watch. In Turkey, last year, in a few matches, the war referee gave the decision after 5 minutes. Everybody stopped. Everything stopped. The referee is waiting. Players are waiting the war referee to give the decision.
I mean, personally, I think that, you know, your passion about how bad refereeing is in Turkey does suggest to me that there is still, you know, passion from football fans about the sport. But obviously, that it seems like there needs to be some reform of some of the systems that are affecting the sport. I mean, if refereeing is not a meritocratic, organization, then obviously that it seems like the Football Federation needs to do something to improve the standard of refereeing.
But the problem is it's impossible, because we have a referee now. In my childhood, there was a referee called Metin Tokat. We knew that his father, Serkan Tokat, his father, Talat Tokat, was also a referee, a veteran referee. I spent my childhood with Metin Tokat. Now, I'm 30, there is Serkan Tokat, which is his son, and now he's the referee. Not because of they are very talented. They know how to move there. You understand? They know to work with the bureaucracy, because they were the bureaucracy.
Would you say in general then that the kind of interference of politics or economic forces in Turkish football is quite a negative thing, that you have these networks of power and influence that affect the fortunes of clubs? So to me, that would seem that it takes away some of the joy and the kind of competitiveness of the sport.
Well, John, I'm sorry, but I had to argue with you.
Good.
Well, we know that this year, the champion of Italy will be Juventus. We know next year, the champion of Italy will be Juventus. As we know, the champion of France will be Paris Saint-Germain, and the champion of Germany will be Bayern Munich. We have no doubt on this. Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, and Bayern Munich will be champion as long as they want. Those leagues are not competitive.
Do you think, in a way, it's a good thing that teams like Başakşehir are having this level of success, because it provides more competition
to
the league?
If it was a real football team, I would say that. But if it's not a real football team, I cannot say. But if it was a city team, like Bursa, who became the champion in 2010, the fifth biggest club in Turkey. If you become a champion in Turkey, we call you, it's a big club. This is why I say biggest clubs. Fenerbahçe and Galatasaray are the biggest clubs. Third biggest is the Beşiktaş. Fourth is Trabzon. Fifth is Bursa. And sixth is Başakşehir. What it shows us is, I think it's also, it has a connection with AKP. AKP showed us that the merchants of Anatolia, which we call, again, with the same thing, the Tigers of Anatolia, like the like how we define the football team of Trabzon. Bursa is a very well known with industry. There are many factories, there are like automotive factories there.
It also used to be the capital of the Ottoman Empire at one point as well.
Yeah, but
if there was a place that there should be an Osmanlispor, it should be in Bursa, I guess, really, rather than Ankara.
I agree, but the main thing is there should not be a club called Osmans.
Oh, come on, why not? It's fun. Well, you get to wear a fez, you know.
Nobody wears fez, but
but if you support Osmanlispor, you should be able to wear one.
Well, can you think that a team called FC Charlemagne in Plus or FC Tudors in the same thing, FC
that,
Tudors?
No, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. I'd love to see that. Everybody dressing up like Henry VIII. The stadium in like mock Tudor architecture style. It would be amazing. I want English teams to have a really good branding system. I think that's what English football's really missing at the
moment.
Well,
but you behave that club, the idea of the club, not as a real club, and a really funny thing. You want to see something like that, and it makes you laugh. But a real club is not for laughing, it's for supporting. So, Başakşehir is not a club, FC Tudors is not a club, Charlemagne is not a club.
I think that this is like the statement that a real club is not for laughing, it's for supporting, is possibly like the most Turkish thing I've heard this week. Like, this is not a joke, this is serious.
And this is, by the way.
So who's gonna win the league this year then?
Well, I have no idea. I hope that will be Fenerbahçe. But what I think, as an objective journalist, it will be Fenerbahçe or Başakşehir.
Not a real club, though.
Not a real club, but we can be under a Başakşehir championship years, like what Lyon did in France in 2005 or 2015, something like that. They won 7 years or 8 years.
Maybe after Başakşehir wins 5 championships, maybe they'll have some supporters there after that.
No, never. to have a supporter, you have to be something real. You have to touch people. Başakşehir has even no colors.
Aren't they black and white? Or...
No, well, it's something it's... like orange and
oh, orange. Yeah, yeah, blue. Yeah. No, I was gonna mention at the start of this the famous opening ceremony of Başakşehir's stadium in 2014, where Tayyip Erdoğan played as a striker for a friendly match team of Başakşehir, and scored a hat trick in the first half. And as we were saying yesterday, I think, you know, obviously you have to credit Erdoğan's shooting abilities. Like, obviously, the guy can hit a football with his foot, you know, but, you know, he's still a 60-year-old man. And, you know, some of the defending wasn't very good, perhaps. But I was going to mention that at the beginning, because I think it's quite an interesting example of you know, the way in which football and politics are intertwined in Turkey, that you have the president of the country, or the prime minister at that time, playing in an exhibition match for the opening of a new team stadium, scoring a few goals. It looks good for him. It looks good for the club, and so on.
And their jerseys was also orange in that.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
What I can say is I shout and chant when our leader scores, and it makes me very proud that I have a prime minister like Lewandowski, like Wilfried Zaha, maybe.
Do you think, I mean, this kind of is a broader question, but leading on from this subject, which is that Turkish governments have always tried to create this kind of top-down social change by, you know, reorientating the government's policies by, you know, funding certain cultural activities or banning certain things, whether it was the Kemalists in the early Republic period with their drive for secularization, or whether it's the AKP now with their sort of pious generation funding of the Imam Hatip schools and stuff like that. But it never seems to really work, that kind of top-down cultural reorganization. As much as any government could try to impose its will and its policies on it, on any nation, real social change has to come from the bottom up. It's not something that can be imposed on a country or on a people. And the same is true of football. You can't just create a club from nowhere.
Yes. What I can tell is there is a writer also in Ahval who is called Baskın Orhan. He's a professor of international politics. And he says this, the thing that what you call is top down is a thing that he thinks that it's a bullet in a pistol, but you can just fire only once. Then you have to leave it to the bottom. Then you will light a candle, but you have to wait, because you cannot wait always bottom to do something. Sometimes you need to do at least something. You have to do something. Then afterwards, but if you start doing it regularly, then what he says, then the bullet that you fired will come back as a boomerang and finds your head. So if you start doing it again and again, that bullet will kill you. That bullet will not mobilize the bottom. That will not mobilize the people. I believe it is same, of course, in football. What I mean is, Başakşehir, if you're talking about Başakşehir, is not a club. They established it, and they now trying to add very well-known players, like Adebayor is coming to Başakşehir. But the problem is, who is paying the salary? Who is paying that salary? No jersey. No one buys jerseys. No income. No spectators. No income. Where does that money come from?
They have a sponsor, right?
They have a sponsor. And the next question, why a businessman becomes a sponsor of a team has no spectators, has no commentators on televisions? Nobody speaks about Başakşehir unless they get the trophy. So now this is what we have to talk about. Why a businessman becomes a sponsor of a non-known team? Nobody speaks about the Başakşehir.
Well, like we were saying earlier, it's part of a kind of a patronage network of economic power. I mean, you would
become power of the political power. So if I were a businessman, I would be the sponsor of Başakşehir, because when you become the sponsor of Başakşehir, you will get very close to those men, and those men will take you up.
Yeah, you would be demonstrating your kind of political loyalty to the government by becoming involved in that kind of business, right?
Yeah. Then they may let you do something as a favor, and that favor is the thing why you became the sponsor.
I think maybe we should wrap it up there, because we've gone over time anyway, and I'm going to have to edit this down into something a bit smaller.
I see, but I want to add one more thing.
Go for it.
Well, the economy of the Turkish clubs. The biggest clubs, the Turkish clubs, I'm sorry, the Istanbul clubs, will never get bankrupted. They will always be here. They're at the brink of the cliff, but they will not fall. But a few years, we will be trying to walk in a marsh. It will be very hard, very difficult, very maybe draining for everybody. And it will also decrease the number of attendances. But this is how it's gonna be in following 5 years, because there are very large amounts of debts for the clubs, and then they don't have the capability to pay them. Because the clubs get money in Turkish liras and their debts are in dollars and euros. So when the currency, when there's a volatility between those currencies, you think that you sold, let's say, 1 million jerseys. But when euro becomes 8.6 from 7.7, then 300,000 of your, let's say 30% of your profit, is gone. So it's very hard for those clubs to pay their debts when they earn money with Turkish liras and having debts with global currencies.
And I mean, added to that, obviously, the pandemic means that they're not even earning attendance, money from ticket sales. So,
sure.
It's hard to see how there won't be some bankruptcies. I mean, obviously the big clubs will be able to survive, but I think, you know, some of the smaller clubs are going
to
face.
They have to survive. If Fenerbahce says that we're bankrupted and we're closing this club, that prime minister will never ever be re-elected again. It's impossible. No one can let Fenerbahçe, Galatasaray or Beşiktaş to face the destiny that Juventus has lived. Fenerbahçe can never be in second division. What we say in Turkey, one day you can see snows in red snowing, but you can never see Fenerbahçe in second division.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Bilgehan. It's very lovely to chat to you. And
yes.
Thanks for being as objective as possible about Fenerbahçe. I know that's very hard for you to do. I wish Fenerbahçe luck with the rest of the season, and maybe they'll defeat the Ghost Club this year.
Well, I hope, but what I want to add is, at the end, if Fenerbahçe is not in the race, I will support the team who will be competing with Başakşehir. At the end, Galatasaray is the biggest rival of Fenerbahçe, but what I think is, Galatasaray is a football club, so we have to support football clubs, not the ghost ones.
I like how much of this episode has just been like dunking on Başakşehir. I think hopefully we don't have any Başakşehir fans who are watching this, which seems unlikely because they don't exist anyway. So it's quite safe to make fun of their fans. So anyway, thank you very much. And speak to you soon.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.